For August the 18th, 2023, we talk about B-Carbonize, Gears Tactics, Injustice 2, and much more. Welcome to Level 469. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome one, welcome all. Welcome back. I think last week it was me, Jala, and Dennis, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Welcome back, Ben and David. There we go. I should normally look up and see who was here last time so I know who to jump to, but I didn't and often don't.
What is time even?
It is all good.
Where are people even?
Yeah.
You can. It's the M last name havers are the people who are out.
True. Ooh. Yes. So Ben, how about you? What's going on?
Not much. Full disclosure, I didn't come on the podcast last week because I had no games to talk about, and I cannot play Baldur's Gate 3 on my computer, so I am very sad.
Oh no.
But it was cool. I went to a Magic meetup instead last week, and that was a lot of fun. It was Cube Draft. And so I did a mono green, try and sneak out Eldrazi type deck, if that means anything to anyone.
Nope.
And I went 1-2, which is good for me because people are really good there. So
what is the current Magic sets? I don't know, vibe or lore or whatever.
Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay. I thought Lord of the Rings was a side thing. Is that actually considered part of the main rotation?
That I'm not sure of, because there's so many different formats. I know some of the cards are in Legacy and stuff like that because they're disrupting some of the formats.
In terms of how is Wizards making a butt ton of money now?
Yeah.
Yes, it is current.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I'll say this real quick because I don't think we capped it off, but Post Malone got the One Ring card. Thumbs up.
He seems like a good guy. He bought it. Yeah.
Right. There we go. I was going to say that is very unlikely.
Yes. Yeah.
So other than playing Magic and learning Magic news, which, trust me, I understand our games being put into the banter. I know that that's happening. Don't think you're getting one over on me. Anything else? Anything else, Ben?
Well, I found out next week Magic's doing another cube, so I'll probably start playing Arena again then.
Oh.
So is this that movie they put you in a death labyrinth?
There's a similar level of frustration there. Yeah.
Yeah. They put you in the device. Yeah.
Oh. And pretty endless. Yeah. That's a good analogy for it.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Not too much. I actually had some people in town. We had a martial arts seminar this past weekend.
Oh, cool.
So it was a lot of fun. Seminar went over rescue techniques, so techniques for, if someone has someone else pinned against a wall and is pummeling on them, or grabbed or that sort of thing, basically pulling them off.
Okay.
And then multiple attacker techniques, how to approach, I mean, if there's multiple people versus you, you're kind of screwed, but how to be slightly less screwed?
What about if you have a friend cornered by existential dread?
No one can help with that. Yeah, and then we went and watched, it was the 50th anniversary of Enter the Dragon, so they showed that on at the local movie theater.
Nice.
And it was really cool. I'd never seen it before. It was interesting, seeing how many things there were in it that would later influence other things.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was also really interesting seeing, for example, how progressive it was for its time in terms of, having very multiracial set of heroes and stuff like that.
I mean, you know Bruce Lee says trans rights.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, anybody who was alive 50 years ago or anything that happened 50 years ago, do not assume.
Fair enough.
Just
the space that Bruce Lee occupies in the public's consciousness says trans rights.
Yes.
Again, I don't know enough about him. I would like to believe that. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, it was really interesting. It's kind of sad because that's the last movie he made, and it was the first, the only movie I guess he made that was like had Hollywood funding.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can definitely see the improvement over his previous movies, and you can kind of see how, kind of the alternate universe where he had, been able to continue to grow as an actor and stuff like that. So yeah. It was an interesting experience. It was pretty cool.
I guess I didn't realize that he didn't do that much work in Hollywood. I obviously knew that, he worked in, markets that were not Hollywood. I guess I didn't realize that that's how the career lined up.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other major not Chinese thing he did was Green Hornet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Huh. Well, that was television, too.
Right. So. Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, yeah. And then obviously died very young.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Was that cool to like go and see like an older movie like that, like with a group? I assume like people who went there were seeking that out.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Very much nice. So.
Yeah. No, I wish that happens more around here. Like that is something that like chain theaters have started doing, is having like classic showing kind of night kind of things. But it's just very, the schedule's always weird.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you? What's going on?
Not too much, but the most exciting thing is what will be happening tomorrow for me, which is my Steam Deck will arrive.
Oh,
I'm finally
nice.
Taking the plunge. A news story that won't make it into this week's NBOS is that Steam is going to start selling refurbished Steam Decks. With their seal of approval and everything. I was talking with some people about that actually in our Slack. And Case, I hope you're listening, Case, you are awesome, was like, I mean, I've got one I'm not using. I can do you one better than that. And so we made the connection and it is en route as we record.
That is wonderful.
And so I will soon be able to play all of my favorite games from bed. And we'll probably never get out again. That's at least the plan. We'll see.
Yeah. Bye forever, everybody.
I'm sure I can hack it to podcast from my bed, but I will be podcasting from my Steam Deck.
Okay. So, well, it's got a browser on. There's like a whole desktop mode. It's probably
we'll figure it out.
It's probably fine.
Yeah. If my quality dips, you'll know why. But no, it's in service of a great cause.
Well, there can be a dock for it that has Ethernet that can run to it. Mm-hmm. So this might, what you're describing might actually be more possible. Which I shouldn't be saying because it's just encouraging the fact.
I know, it's like, well, I wasn't going to do it, but now that it feels like you're putting a lot of thought into this, and I don't want to like waste so
it's
I guess I have to.
It's more fun to try to solve the problem than it is to be like, no, none of us were ever tempted to do that. How dare you?
Yep. Cool. So that's coming up. Over the weekend, did a little family trip to Mammoth Caves in Kentucky.
Oh, nice. How
which was
that?
Cool as hell. Really, really neat. And just going way far underground. Nothing too intense. It was all stuff that the kids come along on comfortably. But it's just, you get into nature in a way that just like, I've always thought, nature can inspire awe in a way that man-made structures just never can for me. Mm-hmm. And so it's always fun to find something new in that category. In Mammoth Caves, definitely did that. Of note, no mammoths. It was an adjective.
I was going to make the joke. Mammoth Caves. Yeah. They are very. It's false advertising. They're simply gigantic.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you just didn't see the mammoths.
Mm.
Oh damn! True. Stealth mammoths. I'm terrified now.
Waiting just out of sight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, we stayed in a cabin at a nearby little park area, and that was good times.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a D&D session on the crappy ether, Wi-Fi for the park area,
mm-hmm.
sitting outside under the stars, with my little laptop. That was a very surreal experience. So. But good times nonetheless.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the kids weren't freaked out by kind of the claustrophobia?
Oh, hell no. They were all about it. Because nice. It's not claustrophobic to them. I'm the one who has to bend over.
That's
perfect sized for them.
Yeah.
So that was fun. We did Mammoth Caves, and then there was another one, I think it was like Lost River Cave or something like that, where literally like you take a boat into the cave.
Oh, badass.
It was cool as hell. Like, yeah, just really neat stuff.
Yeah.
So now I just cannot not think about how there's systems of caves under our feet that probably have, some crazy lizard men in them. I think this is how the descent into conspiracy theories begins.
Well, I think it's how the descent begins.
Oh, yes, that too.
The descent into the descent. That's how it begins.
Yeah, okay.
God, that movie's really good.
Oh man. Yeah. So that's an eventful week for me for sure.
Nice. Yeah. No. And I've just been having an adventure in trying to get a CPAP machine. Trying to get my sleep to not be a fucking nightmare, which is in turn a nightmare in and of itself. Yeah. No, I've never slept.
Hard stop.
Yeah. No.
I don't do sleep.
Yeah. No, I've just I've always, even when I was like really little, even before I put on weight, had problems, and I've never sought to correct it because I got some body image issues, and CPAPs are things the heavy people have. And I'm a heavy person.
And old people.
And old people, yes. In time with also starting to exercise, I thought, well, while I've got this self-improvement kind of thing going on, just let's get over this little bit of dysmorphia or whatever's happening here and, go and get that problem solved. Last week, I had an at-home sleep test. I don't know how they got actual data off of it because I didn't sleep a goddamn wink.
Hmm.
I don't think I did. Apparently I did. It was enough for them to be like, hey, you need to come in here as soon as possible.
You thought the problem was that you didn't do sleep. The real problem is that you don't do breathing while you sleep.
I don't do breathing. So to give a little bit of perspective, there's a number, like there's a metric that they have, and there's a threshold over which you're considered to have severe sleep apnea. I'm more than doubled that.
Oh my God.
And my blood oxygen level on the night of the at-home sleep test, that was it fell as, you don't want it to be below 90, it fell as low as 75, which is like end stage, like OG COVID levels, like dying
Cole,
and need a respirator
is
levels.
Clinically dead right now.
Yeah, I mean, apparently several times during the night, I kind of am.
Oh my God. Oh,
no. Yeah.
I mean,
that's scary.
Yeah.
Are we sure this is really what happened and they are just not Manchurian candidating you?
Maybe. I don't know. At this point, I'll take whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I can just wake up feeling well-rested, you can Manchurian candidate the hell out of me.
Yeah, program me, activate me.
How many presidents after murder?
Incept me, please. Yeah, yeah. So I went and did the in-lab sleep study last night, prepared to sleep very, very little. Because when they were wiring me up, I said, oh, I sleep on my stomach. And the tech said, you don't anymore.
Oh, no. Wait, doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose?
What?
Well, you would think they'd want you to, like, sleep the way you sleep.
Yeah, they want you to sleep on your back where the sleep apnea is the worst so they can get, like, a good, like, basically set the pressure for a worst case scenario, you know, kind of deal. So, but yeah, I did that, actually slept okay as they got it. And now I'm just waiting for insurance. And there's all of this you know, fear and, you know, anxiety that I have related to what I sought treatment for, anxiety and ADHD, which was like insurance can just come along and say, nope, I know that you paid hundreds of dollars and worked with many professionals who said you need this to not die of a heart attack in the middle of the night. But we're just deciding not to give it to you. At which point I'm just going to pay out of pocket for it because my insurance is shit anyway, but it's still, if I could have gone down to the medical supply company and gotten the thing today, I would have done it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, which I'm only sharing all this information to let people know it is a shitty thing to try to solve because of the system. But like, based on the fact that actually was able to fall asleep last night, even as they were getting the thing set up, means that it does work. So if you're at all thinking that maybe this is a problem for you, you know, if I, with my hangups, can take the step, it might be something you can look into doing too.
Yeah, man, good on you for doing that.
Yeah, definitely.
Every episode from here on out, once you get set up, you're just going to be so freaking high energy.
I don't
you guys get ready, ready for a new side of Cole.
Another thing that like one of the reasons why I did this was as I started wearing my Apple Watch again to track my exercise and stuff. I also wore it while I was sleeping in order to track my sleep. I looked at the charts and then just like the just red, like you were awake like at all of these times. And you know, it's saying like, yeah, you were in bed for like 7.5 hours. You slept for like 3.5. Really?
Yeah, that's rough.
You know, so like, and I never questioned it really, you know, before I started measuring it, because I just figured this is how everybody felt all the time. You know, like people take naps. I can't take naps because I can't fall asleep, but people take naps. It's okay. Yeah, no. So I've got no idea what my fucking power level is going to be like when I get a single night's solid sleep. So I think we can all we can all check and see how that's gonna turn out.
On next Watch week's out, episode,
hopefully by next week's episode. Yeah. So that's been my story, and not sleeping after the show last week fucking ruined me for the entire week too. So, oh man. But yeah, that's where I'm at. Let's see. And I don't know.
As a side note, I appreciated the incredibly stylish cat boy.
What?
Jala posted a picture, you had sent her something of a
oh yes, the character Zilch from Raincode, the Master Detectives Archives, the murder mystery visual novel that we talked about last week. Yes, I saw that character, I saw the design, and I was like, David probably needs to see this. This is a possible this is a possible cosplay idea.
Yep. So
there you go. I'm glad that you enjoyed that. That my instinct was correct. Yeah. Cool. Well, I think we've got games to talk about, so, you know, seeing as two of you weren't here last week. So why don't we do that? Have the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And we can get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, going to go to you first.
This is going to be a real disappointing one. I've just been playing Diablo 4. I'm kind of in the just, you know, get ready for Dragon Con and play when I can mode. The only news item or like new thing with that is they released a new expansion, a new patch, which significantly buffed the sorceress.
Okay.
So it's now at least semi-viable in endgame.
And then did that piss off the people who played the other classes because they didn't get a treat?
I am sure.
Yeah.
Speaking for the druids over here, we are so full on treats. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
I think the current, like, I don't know, community is convinced they're the redheaded stepchild is apparently summoner necromancers.
Okay, so now class specialties are taking grievance.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's a new meaning for redheaded stepchild.
because of the blood on the skeletons?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Boneheaded stepchild.
I just wanted to make sure. I just wanted to make sure I was following it. Yeah.
Crimson-headed stepchild.
Oh, there you go.
I like that. Yeah. Nice. I mean, have you done like the season specific like special content, like story content or what have you, with this, or are you still just kind of?
I've done most of it. I'm like nearing in on. I'm basically on the last stage of the new missions. Honestly, the seasonal content is super super light.
Mm-hmm.
They're just. Isn't much of it, but yeah such as is I've done.
Okay. Yeah, nice. And is that all Diablo 4?
Yep, that's all I have, so I'm gonna have to track something down, but
okay, cool. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I got two small weird ones this week. Just smaller games that are on Steam that I've been playing just by happenstance. One of them is a game called Toilet Chronicles, because sure. It is a $7 game. It is a like puzzle horror comedy type game.
I mean, $7 for a whole Chronicles has got to be good value, right?
The Chronicle is not too long. I
would expect it to be like the toilet pamphlet.
Yeah.
It's not a long game. I think I beat it in like an hour's time. So it is a very short, bite-sized game. I saw it originally because I saw a streamer playing it on a Friday night just for fun. Mm-hmm. It seemed okay, but it kind of quickly loses steam. Like after about a half an hour, 45 minutes, it's kind of like rote puzzle solving that is kind of like, I guess that's a solution to the puzzle, I guess.
Looks kind of escape roomy.
Yeah, and there's like I would say the first half of it's pretty entertaining and pretty decent and interesting, and it kind of gives you some surprises, but yeah, it kind of devolves pretty quickly. And a huge puzzle game no-no is the final test is you have to put in a combination. You have to like there's like six different kind of pseudo puzzles hidden around the map. Mm-hmm. And if you get all six numbers, you can enter them in the store. But the reason why that's a puzzle no-no is like you always want to make it like Baba Is You, where it's like, you just need to solve three of these five puzzles, not you need to solve all five of these puzzles.
Right.
Because it is so easy for somebody to just not get a single one and then be boxed out of the rest of the content.
And those incidentally, the six incidental puzzles or five incidental puzzles, like those are not related at all to the main ones that you are doing. It's like...
It's like a meta puzzle, essentially. Like the game's like a series of puzzles, but then there's like this kind of like Easter eggs you see throughout, and so then that you have to kind of mentally take note of, and then answer a final challenge at the end, I guess.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's weird. It's kind of entertaining. If it were like a dollar or two, I would say pull the trigger on it. But as it stands, it's just okay.
I'm sure that the game Steam page is now going to have in their quotes like, it's kind of entertaining. Ben Merkel.
Maybe.
What's the horror content in this? Obviously, without spoiling anything for anybody who might be interested, but like, is it comedy forward? Like, what are we working with here?
There's some kind of like surrealist elements to it. Like, there's a person that you talk to next to you in a toilet stall who you never see, but you interact with a lot. There's tentacle deaths that you can have. You can get exploded by a random thing that I won't spoil. Actually, there's a couple of random things that can kill you by exploding. It's similar to Don't Shit Your Pants, the online game.
Where
they serialize the different types of endings that you can get, and so they'll give you like an award and a kind of cue card if you get the different endings.
Gotcha.
But that said, it's not as variant as Don't Shit Your Pants. You can get all of the endings like pretty easily. So yeah, I got all the endings. Yeah. So
God, Don't Shit Your Pants is a good game.
It is. Yeah. I'm ready to move on to my second game, if that's okay.
That's fine.
This one is more interesting, and it's more free. So those are two pluses. The second game I played was recommended by a friend. It's called Becarbonize. That's a play on words of decarbonize, but Becarbonize, like B-E-E. Okay. This is a single-player, kind of like board game-esque video game. There's a board game that was made almost like 10 years ago that was called CO2, where it's like a co-op game where you're trying to keep the CO2 limits down on the Earth. And it's co-op because you're trying to do this together so you don't all die. This is almost like a video game equivalent of that, but they make some interesting design choices. So the main thrust of it is there's a giant meter that has like your CO2 level at the top, and it's filling from left to right. If it fills all the way, everyone dies in the Earth, and that's a game over. Okay. But
it's good to know that that's a loose condition.
Yeah. And what you're doing is you have four different industries kind of in a tapestry in front of you, and you have three different resources. The three different resources are money, people, and science. And the tapestries in front of you are industry, like power plants and stuff, ecosystems, which is like nature preserves. I think people is the name of the third tapestry category, but that's things like policies that you could possibly make to like limit industry and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then there's science at the far end, which is just like scientific advancements to try and slow global warming. So there's things like decarbonization or like carbon capture and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so the basic gist is all of these industries are running on like a time loop where every 50 seconds you'll generate one money, or every 30 seconds you generate one person, but it costs you one money to do that. Or every 90 seconds you generate one science. And then what you do with that in these tapestries in front of you is you pick basically a technology to invest in. And after a certain cycle, or a certain amount of time, depending upon how complicated the project is, that'll generate on the tapestry. And it's like a tech tree where whatever you generated, that might be able to generate other things on top of it. So for example, like it might be like fossil fuels is something that you can generate that increases how quickly you're generating money. But also each of these tapestries have a CO2 amount that they're contributing. And the main thing is like industry has, you start at like every cycle it's producing like 20 CO2. And then the other three, it's kind of up to you to which technologies you develop, whether it's a positive or a negative.
Okay.
And so the win condition is if like you can develop the other three industries to be negative enough to cancel out the industry and be like cycling quicker than the industry, then you can decarbonize the atmosphere and stave off global warming.
Okay, so you can change the rate at which things cycle. So yes. Industry starts out the fastest, but it doesn't always need to be the fastest. Okay.
Yeah. And there are things that modify it both up and down. So like the base for industry is, I think it's like every 40 seconds you generate a coin. But if you say you develop fossil fuels, it's marked by like up arrows and down arrows, whether it's increasing or not. And so like that might generate two up arrows. So now like every 30 seconds you're generating a coin, but every time you generate a coin, you're also generating 20 carbon. Yeah. So that's, and the other thing is as the meter fills up, there's certain tipping points, like certain milestones where if you hit them, an event will come up in this kind of like danger area. And you have a limited amount of time to resolve whatever the event is. So it could be something like acidification of the ocean or like coral reefs dying and stuff like that. And you need a certain number of resources to resolve them. Some of them, it's just like, if you don't resolve them, then you might lose like two science and it goes away. Some of them are recurring where it's, if you don't solve this, it's going to spawn a new event and then that'll be even worse. And now you got two events you need to
and
solve.
And so it cascades. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a pretty fun game. I haven't stepped into the hardcore mode yet, but I think I might because like the last three games in a row I was able to win. But it's a really cool mechanic. If nothing else, this is like a really cool demo that you could make an even bigger game out of. It just seems like a really cool way to pull off this sort of theming. And it doesn't feel like, I don't know, for even though it's like a very prescient topic. It doesn't feel like it's like preachy, or it doesn't feel like it's politicized or anything like that. No. It just seems pretty like matter of fact.
Just modeling the dynamics, and kind of letting you arrive. Yeah, just like looking at this developer's other games, it seems that they make serious games, which is a label game, serious games, games for change kind of stuff. Yeah. Specifically trying to mechanize or systematize real life things in order to bring some understanding to the people who play them. Think like Cart Life.
So I definitely recommend playing this. It's free, and it's you could probably knock out a game or get to a victory condition in like 2 hours. So
yeah, it almost feels like like an idle game. When you said it's board game like, I didn't picture it being in real time like that.
Yeah.
But like watching as resources go up at different rates and trying to use those resources at the right time to kind of affect the kind of meta progression in a way does feel very much like some of the meta games or some of the idle games that I have played.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm saying that in a value neutral way. I'm not like shitting on idle games because of that, or trying to shit on this.
Yeah, I wouldn't interpret it as such.
Yeah.
I would be curious to see like what the expert level players do on this game. I'm not sure like how big of a following this game has, but like the one thing that's like an interesting the times that I've won quickest is just like don't do any development in industry and just try and do like ecosystem as much as possible to rely on getting money. And then try and like stave off as quickly as possible, like get negative recurring, like get like carbon sinks as quickly as possible. But there is a path where you can do like fracking and you can just go like really hard the other direction. No. But it is tough, like because you start hitting those milestones really quickly, and maybe that's the point of the game is like it's just being like an accurate model and. Maybe there's not a viable way to win with that route, but
possible to slide back over those tipping points, or is that just like a ratchet after which you cannot decarbonize, even if you go negative?
No, you can still decarbonize from there. It's once you pass over it, the event happens, and then if you go under it, like you can pass it again, and there's no change. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like the like once you pass it, like the event happens, and it's kind of removed from the meter. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
So this is going to be me being an awful person, but is there the option to just, like, go to war and wipe out enough other people to, rebalance everything?
Taking a Malthusian run.
There's descriptors when you get towards the end of the world situation that are pretty grim, where it talks about, like, there being, you know, country refugees and stuff like that. So even though you don't have a choice of... There's not, like, a civilization deploy the nuke choice in this game... if you're looking for that grimness, it's tucked there in the end. If you, especially if you do a fracking run, but interesting game, worth a try. Especially, I'm looking at you, Dennis. I think you would be interested in playing the hardcore mid of this.
You seem like you would like to suffer.
It looks neat. I had never heard of this. How'd you find out about it?
A friend, old coworker from Austin. I'll shout out John Mendel. He recommended it to me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Decarbonize. Why bees?
I don't know. Like nature. I guess like the ecosystem angle. Oh.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I got.
I mean, bees are the only ones taking this whole climate change thing seriously.
So. Well, yeah, they're doing it by disappearing.
The actual answer is probably... It's not
my yard. Oh, my God. That's a whole other story.
The actual answer is probably because it wasn't trademarked. So.
Ah, yes. Yeah, that's... Nice. So Toilet Chronicles and Becarbonize. You're right. Those were two weird ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. So just one new game that I'll get to in a second. I've been playing some fun Magic the Gathering. So if I can rip us back to that from banter.
Okay.
I was kind of bored. You know, I primarily play in standard mode, which is like the last several sets, but not all sets. Was feeling a little stuck and decided, you know what would be fun is if I crowdsource a deck. And so similar to how I've been doing Slay the Spire via Reddit post, I asked Reddit to build me a Magic the Gathering deck and just said, suggest one card a day And every day, the most upvoted card I will add to the deck. And so that's been going on for the past several weeks. Just to speed things up, I said, you know, once a card has been added as a one of, another post can recommend it go to any number of that card.
Yeah.
So you could go to the full four. So, you know, it didn't take 60 days fully to do.
Right. And so you're not just like, okay, today's another land day.
Yeah. How are you doing lands? Yeah.
Yeah. I kept recommended lands turned on. So it kind of auto filled the 24. And then once the deck hit 60, I had a day where you could just recommend a whole slate of lands.
Okay.
To go. So it was kind of one extra day on the end. And then if it wound up being a deck where we wanted to have 25 lands instead of 24 lands, and just one of the days, even though we weren't at 60 cards yet, a land won. So that became an extra land in the deck.
Mm-hmm.
So I put into Notion, and I'll drop into the Slack, a link to the final deck list. But of course, the first card recommended was a five color card. So typically in Magic, like, you try to be one or two colors, maybe three, but like slightly three.
So they tried to fuck you.
Yeah, they tried to fuck me out the gate.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, like, I was looking for something stupid and fun.
Uh-huh.
So I mean I kind of knew it was going to be some kind of meme deck. But they started like on, you know, cranked to 11 on meme.
Okay, I couldn't tell if you were saying mean deck or meme deck.
Meme, yes, meme. Okay,
because either would have worked in this scenario.
Or as my brother pronounced it before he'd ever heard the word uttered, a meme.
Meme, yes.
But yeah, so it's a five-color deck that kind of starts out with just a lot of things that ramp and try to get you to your bigger cards faster. That also has the dual purpose of pulling kind of selectively all the different color lands that you're going to need to play those cards.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if you can survive to get to that point, you just drop bomb after bomb after bomb. And it's been really fun, really unique. And I've actually gone 6-2 so far with the deck. So that is probably a better win rate than I have on any other deck.
Nice. So it's at least viable.
Yes. So at the very least viable. There were some people on Reddit that were like, I'm going to use this to like grind to mythic this cycle, you know, or like get to the, you know, top levels of competition or whatever. I'm like, good luck. We shall see. But my experience so far with it has been great.
Nice.
Yeah. So that has shaken things up. If you are a Magic Arena player and are curious, we can drop a link to it in the show notes. But that has been a lot of fun this week watching that come together. And then it's kind of the arc that it was with the Slay by Spire thing as well, where it starts out all meme all the time. Like, what is just the funniest, craziest things we could put in? And then people realize, like, oh, wait, we're actually going to see this through. And so they start brainstorming, like, okay, how do we take this low random base? Yeah, how do we fix this? Which my joke was, since they started with a five-color card, there's literally nothing you can do to go out of character with that. Because, you know, you've already got all the colors in there, so you can't mess it up anymore on that front.
What was the first card? Was it Kami War? Or
the Kami War, yeah, was the first card. And then what was the second one? It might have been like the Invasion of Alara or something like that, like another five color card.
So
and it kept on getting weird from there.
So Ben, you've mentioned that the color someone goes with, you know, tells you a lot about them. So what does five color tell you?
It's chaotic.
Yep. Yeah. So that has been a ton of fun.
What's your kind of like end game with this? Like, when are you going to stop using it? Or like, do you see yourself having Reddit generate a new one for you?
I don't think so. Primarily because the Lord of the Rings set was not a standard set. Okay. It wasn't relevant to me. And so I've gotten bored with the standard meta because the infusion of new cards didn't hit the type of Magic that I play. And so I think the next set is coming up in a month or so.
Okay.
Maybe less. And so I think when that, you know, hits, I'll probably go to whatever is new with that.
Is that going to be the Assassin's Creed one or
Wilds of Eldraine? okay. which means nothing to me.
Right.
But yeah, no, Assassin's Creed is on the horizon. That's a whole nother thing.
Mm-hmm.
I saw someone sent me a picture. It was Magic the Gathering Extended Universes Peppa Pig.
just roll it in.
They're doing all of them now. So yeah. Why not? Yeah. So that's Magic the Gathering. Check that out if you're so inclined. I guess there are two new games. Another new game that I've been playing. Someone recommended I check out Gears Tactics, the turn-based strategy Gears of War game. I think I've mentioned on the show that I picked up a copy of Band of Blades, which is a TTRPG system. And I was talking with people about flavorful sources of inspiration for that. And like, mm-hmm. what could I play if I wanted to get inspiration? Someone was like, Gears Tactics would totally fit it. So I checked that out. Fun game. And it has the same problem that all turn-based strategy games have for me, which is it just made me wish I was playing XCOM.
Yeah.
It's good. There's a really interesting kind of the hook, I guess, is that when you kill an enemy, they're usually downed instead of killed. And then you can run up and do a melee kill to give everyone else, you can run up and do a melee kill with one character to give all the other characters on your squad an extra action.
Oh, okay.
And so, to do that, you're usually sprinting out of cover and putting yourself in a more vulnerable position. But if you can chain those extra actions into more downs, more melee kills, more actions, there's this virtuous cycle that you can create to clear out waves and waves of enemies.
Hmm.
So that's a really cool idea and has you doing riskier things than I would ever do in XCOM.
What kind of like unit diversity is there? Because the last Gears game that I played was Gears 1. Yeah, mm-hmm. In any kind of multiplayer or single player, really. The squad tactics on display there do not seem to lend themselves very well to a strategy RPG kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean. Because of that one system I mentioned alone, there's a fair amount of like squad coordination, because if you're going to shoot him with one guy, you got to have another guy close enough to run over and finish him off and so on and so forth. So far I've gotten the most I've seen in diversity is like one guy has a shotgun instead of an assault rifle. And one guy has a minigun instead of an assault rifle, but they all feel pretty much the same.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if that would get crazier and more differentiated as time went on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was not significant. It wasn't like the differences between the units were what made the gameplay interesting.
Right.
That's probably the right way to say it.
Can you get Coltrane?
I haven't seen him yet. It's Gabe somebody. Is the main character, and I don't know enough to know if that is someone from the main game or if it's someone that was invented for Gears Tactics. Mm. His whole shtick is he used to be Special Forces, but he busted himself down to the motor pool because he, something hasn't been revealed yet, but
right.
He just wants to work on cars and doesn't want to have to do this shit anymore. But
yeah.
You have to do this shit when shit's on the line.
Cool.
What a stirring message.
that is prose when it comes to Gears of War. The other thing is it seems to be much more forgiving or designed around taking damage. So your health pools are larger, and there's a lot of things like grazed shots or partial damage, etc. So that you feel a lot more permission to put yourself in positions where you take damage. And again, that feeds into this glory kill or whatever you want to call it, for extra actions, etc. So it all kind of feeds together, makes for a good experience. It's just not XCOM. It's mm-hmm. not literally XCOM, and therefore I will never be satisfied with it.
Right. Well, I mean, so back to those differences. is there any kind of like meta campaign? Like, are you developing a squad? Is there any kind of like base going on? Cause like, you know, you're fighting against an invasion of sorts. If I remember the story correctly, like what's happening between and kind of overarching the individual missions.
Yeah. So at the campaign level, you are going after a specific locust leader, who I guess is responsible for creating the larger monstrosities that you see in the game. So he is the Oppenheimer of kaiju.
Okay.
And that is your target. So you are like a special forces squad, that is going after him. Between each mission, you can equip your soldiers with new stuff, and different pieces of armor have different bonuses. And there is some thinking through like, oh, you know, I want to put the crit damage multiplier on my person with a shotgun because that's more likely to crit. And, you know, so there's a little bit of strategy there. But mostly it's like grab the biggest numbers, slap them on your best characters and go.
Mm.
I have not seen yet any kind of branching or decision making on what mission you go to next. But I'm still very much in kind of the on-ramp for the game, not necessarily the tutorial, but the early stages of the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is a interesting take on the turn-based strategy genre in that it comes from a game that is so firmly action-y. I questioned whether or not it would work, but they've done a great job making it work.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like it is kind of made to kind of maybe onboard some people into turn-based strategy games?
Man, I'm so deep in turn-based strategy, it's hard for me to say. I think this would be friendly to that. There is some jank around like, you know, when you initiate the glory kills, your cursor doesn't quite show where your character is going to end up.
Hmm.
But if you kind of like push it towards one side of the enemy when you click versus the other, you might be able to kind of get behind some cover versus be left completely out in the open.
Okay. Influence it. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I knew to look for that just from turn-based game experience. But yeah, I imagine there's a lot of people that played Gears Tactics as their first ever game of this sort. Which is great. You know, the more people play in this type of game, the more of this type of game there will be.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Gears Tactics. Cool. Any questions on that?
No.
I will let everyone know if I encounter Coltrane. I'll send up a flare.
So what I'm wanting to know is, suppose was Frozen Synapse the one that was like XCOM except everything happens at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what if you had to choose between XCOM or Frozen Synapse?
Oh man, XCOM hands down. But Frozen Synapse does have a special place in my heart. The crazy thing, reaching back to Gen Con, the crazy thing is that the new Modern Warfare board game is effectively Frozen Synapse. Like you start with your different characters with different abilities in their bases, and you have to set down what their moves are going to be and like what corners they're checking, where they're covering, and then you flip it all at the same time and like run it through to see who gets where, who lives, and who dies.
I love that the developers apparently think that Call of Duty is a tactical game.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you can't very well actually shoot each other in the board game version. Although I guess there could be some like throw burrito variant. But yeah, so an interesting approximation. I didn't actually get to play it, but I saw it and was like, huh, like I was not expecting to see that.
Yeah. Nice. Cool. What's your other game?
The other new game, I've had a fighting game itch for a while now, which is crazy because I'm terrible at them. I'm so bad at fighting games, but I think I heard all the talk about Street Fighter VI from Jala, and that's just been around that it got me like wanting to play a fighting game. And I put maybe, I don't know, 5 minutes into Street Fighter VI at my local arcade. and was just like, I have no idea what the hell's going on. I need something else.
Yeah.
It was like trying to read Atlantean or something. Like there was no chance I was going to be able to get into that. So I saw that Injustice 2 was on Game Pass. And check that out. That is the like DC character fighting game, superhero fighting game. And that has been weirdly very accessible to me.
Have you played a lot of Mortal Kombat before? Like, do you have any experience with that franchise?
No, okay. almost zero experience with Mortal Kombat.
Right. So the reason I ask is that it's the same team, people, it is. Company. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it Inflection or something like that? Or
I don't know.
What's their name? Yeah. Same developer is behind this. That is behind Mortal Kombat. This is, you know, the latest entry. Obviously, if it's Injustice 2, there was an Injustice 1. And probably the funniest thing to me is, you know, I jumped into the single player campaign and it is like incredibly plot heavy, because not only do you have all these superhero characters that have pre-existing relationships and storylines from the whole of DC Comics,
right?
But you also have the events from Injustice the First, just Injustice, I guess we could call that one.
Okay.
and like apparently in that, Superman decides that killing people is good actually, and forms his own regime.
Yeah, so this is a one of the parallel dimensions.
I guess. And so like it starts, though, Injustice 2 starts with the evil Superman being captured and imprisoned by Batman, who is still on team Don't Kill People.
Okay.
And then everyone proceeds to fight each other for different reasons, doing things that Mortal Kombat, you know, wise would definitely kill people.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But no one actually dies, as far as we can tell. They do get run through the chest with giant swords, etc. Mm-hmm. But you know, they kind of stand back up afterwards, so we can assume everything is on the up and up.
Yeah, it's one of the swords that doesn't mean it.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. You had a question, Ben?
Yeah. Does the evil Superman start the Injustice League then?
It's called the Regime, which I feel like if you're going to name an organization, the Regime is he should have workshopped that a bit more.
Right.
But yeah, apparently there's a whole like segment of the DC universe that was like, yeah, killing would be great. Thank you. And went with Superman on it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, story wise, you know, that is not what you're here for. or maybe it is if you're a huge DC fan.
Yeah. Apparently this is Earth 49.
Sure. Okay. Yes. So, I will yes and that. It is Injustice 2 on Earth 49.
So like the like timeline that most people know of for DC is Earth 1, and then there's a whole bunch of variant like
Is it linear? Like, are there literally 49 at least of these, or is it like they kind of jump up a couple numbers when they make a swap to imply a larger universe?
Sure. I know there's a bunch of them because DC keeps like retconning things and splaying things off and then collapsing the universes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is part and parcel with that genre of media. But yeah, anyway, it's a great excuse for a whole bunch of superheroes to fight each other. And the combat, like I said, was weirdly accessible to me. So, you know, everyone has a light, medium and heavy attack. Combine that with different directions to get different results. And then each character is going to have unique combos, in terms of, you know, the order you hit those buttons in, will change up what their attacks are. But in terms of special moves, like the kind of inputs that require multiple directions and sometimes multiple buttons in sequence, as like kind of a single coordinated thing, it stays really simple. Like you're either going down, back, down, forward, or back forward. And that's really it. Like it is, yeah. It doesn't get more complicated than that. Every superhero has like 5 special moves from that set, just changing whether you're using heavy, medium, or light, and in which combination of those inputs. And that really is all there is to learn, at least in the mechanical input, you know, department. There's a fourth button that is like the unique superhero power for that. So like, you know, Batman calls in batarangs, Green Arrow fires a green arrow. Doesn't sound as cool, I guess.
No, but, not really. It's you know, just kind of his name, isn't it?
You know, Superman shoots laser eyes. So, you know, it's all got that unique flavor. But, you know, in terms of mechanical input, I've found this way more attainable than any other fighting game I've played. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's bad on me for only, you know, trying games that are too hard for my own good, or too complicated, I should say, for my own good. Mm-hmm. But this kind of hits the sweet spot for me.
Nice. Like, is there a character that you've really kind of preferred most?
So the campaign is really cool in that it kind of takes you through a whole bunch of different characters.
Oh, yeah. And that's what the Mortal Kombat game started doing, too.
Yeah. So you get this kind of world tour of all sorts of different styles. And there's definitely ones I've liked more than others. My current favorite is Wonder Woman, because her specials are all just different, like, long range attacks. So mm-hmm. she's very much the hold them off at arm's length or whip's leg length, and kind of make it hard for them to get to you. And at least the AI I'm fighting has a lot of trouble with that. So I've enjoyed that.
Have you messed around with any of the variant costumes?
No, I haven't. There are a couple that show up because, like, this is so dumb. Reverse Flash, you know, appears to fight when you're playing Flash.
Does he run backwards or something?
Everything.
He's
but...
actually another. Sorry, I know way too much about this. He's another alternate universe Flash that's evil that goes around to other universes, killing off the various Flashes.
It'd be cool if he just ran really slow and he was blue, like blue shifted instead of red shifted.
Nope, it's dumber. So where Flash is red with yellow accents, Reverse Flash is yellow with red accents. And I'm also, I have not put enough mental energy towards it to check, but I'm pretty sure his name is an anagram. Is that right? For the like main Flash's name?
Eddie Eobard Thawne?
Yeah, is that?
Yeah,
it's got to be an anagram.
That has to be an anagram if it sounds that bad.
Yeah it's terrible. So you see the variant costumes in that form, in terms of you get kind of the Nega versions of some heroes, or like Robin shows up as then, you know, some variants
Nightwing
of Robin
or something.
Nightwing what's the red? The base one is red.
Red Hood?
Yeah, I think Red Hood.
Yeah, that's the Robin that got beaten to death by the Joker.
Sure, yeah, why not? Not in 49, not in Earth 49, because he's fighting Batman and has apparently Robin is literally Batman's child.
Oh no, that's literally, so basically he gets beaten to death by the Joker, eventually gets revived and comes back as a villain.
He doesn't come back as the Arkham Knight.
Not in Earth 49.
I'm not sure which Earth is.
Yeah. So, just kind of seems to be a lot of similar plots.
Oh Lord. Yeah. The plot's real dumb and it's just an excuse for setting up these fights. Mm-hmm. The moment to moment combat is great though. And as you start getting the feel for, you know, even though I don't know every single character's movesets yet, I'm starting to recognize like, oh, that looks like a heavy attack wind up. I should use light attack. Or like, you know, oh, their special meter is full. I need to, you know, be ready to dodge that or what have you. And that, mm-hmm. that's maybe the one other system that's really interesting is, you know, you build your special meter and then once it's full, you can unleash a giant like cinematic attack where literally mm-hmm. you like watch a video of them doing something. Just, I mean, that would definitely kill anyone that experienced it if we're being real. But it's cool. It showcases what that hero is all about.
They snap your neck, but you just don't mean it.
Mm-hmm. you know, that spends all of your special gauge at once. But it can't, that like the initiation of it can be blocked or dodged. So you got to kind of pick your moment. And then I'm just starting to get into understanding how, like, you can spend partial sections of your gauge to either power up an attack, if you feel confident it's going to hit, or to do like escapes and special dodges, to like either get in or away or what have you. So that is kind of the higher level interplay is using that system. And then the cherry on top is the clash system. So later in the fight, once everyone is lower health, you can initiate a clash where each player bets a portion of their special gauge. If you win the bet, so it's, you know, it's four sections. If you win the bet, you get back a percentage of your health. But that is reduced by the amount that the opposing player bets. And, you know, so if you have a full special gauge, you could just decide, I don't want to bet anything, because even if you get back 33% of your health, I'm just going to use my ultimate attack on you, and you know, it won't matter how much health you have left. Or you could be like, well, I'm going to bet two bars because I don't think they have that much, or what have you. And there's a whole mind game there that's really interesting, because you lose whatever you bet regardless, and it either gets you, you know, a certain amount of health back, or it reduces the amount that the winning player gets back if you're on the losing side. So a very interesting system. I don't know enough about fighting games to say if that's hyper unique or not. I haven't seen a ton of stuff done with health regain. But yeah, you know, the attacks are powerful enough that it doesn't feel like it drags out a fight ever.
No.
But yeah, so you know, once you feel like you've mastered a character, then you start getting into the mind games of how to use their special gauge optimally, and I'm sure it goes from there. And yeah, that's as far as I've gotten. I'm about halfway through the campaign. I have not yet worked up the courage to drop into a live person match. But if anyone plays Injustice 2, I would rather have my ass handed to me by someone I know rather than internet randos. So let me know. And I'll be hanging out with that
Nice.
Over the next couple of weeks. And that's cool. That's me.
Yeah, sounds cool. That was your crowdsourced magic deck, Gears Tactics, and Injustice 2. I keep on forgetting to summarize what people have played after they talk about it, just so people, you know, in case anybody was curious. That is a service I understand is appreciated, so I'm trying to do more of it.
Sure. Well done in this case.
Yeah. It'll be easy for me because I've not played anything. More accurately, I've played stuff for other shows, with me being kind of out of commission last week and also trying to crunch for a week off of recording coming up, doing a lot of assignment play. So I got nothing. Also, I didn't stream because of storms. So we're just gonna let that be.
Well, let's keep it going.
Yeah.
Man, it almost seems like everywhere in the world is dying of storms right now.
I mean, it's the first really bad weather that we've had so far this summer. So we're lucky that it took this long for us to get honest to God tornadoes here. So, well.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah. So sometimes how much you like something is not proportional to how much time you spend with it. So what is a game that you adore, but that you've never actually gotten to the end of? Or, you know, if it's the type of game that doesn't really end, that you haven't gotten to the end game of. What pulled you away from it, and do you think you'll ever finish it?
Yeah. I'll get us started here with David, who says, I think Fallout New Vegas is awesome, and I've played deep into it twice, but I've never finished it. Once because my Xbox 360 red ringed, once because I got distracted and never went back. Don't think I'll finish it, to be honest. Don't feel like I need to. It's still great, even if I don't.
True.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Man, what was the game, Dennis, that you like kept on, like you kept on getting to a place and then it got stolen and then the system red ringed? Was that Mass Effect?
Mass Effect, I definitely have that relationship with. I also like pseudo had that happen with Far Cry 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's discouraging when it happens twice. But yeah,
it's hard to fight through that.
Yeah, Fallout New Vegas has enough like satisfying mini stories in it that you probably got a lot of like really good little arcs, and you have the story for your Wastelander, and you're good.
Well, and it's fortunate that that's the type of game where the ideas behind the story are really what's fun.
Yeah,
And so you can read about some of the stuff without playing it and feel like you got the gist of it.
Or listen to the multi-part.
I don't even remember, like, what was the story? I guess Caesar's Legion trying to take them out?
The conflict over the Hoover Dam. You could side with any, like, you know, with any number of people in that. So it wasn't just dealing with Caesar's Legion. It was deciding who has control over the Mojave.
Ironic that in real life, it'll be gone and no one will have to fight over it.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Why not? Or at least the river that powers it will be gone. Yeah, why not? let's see. David, what does Callum say?
Callum says, Dishonored. I stuck a game-breaking bug three-fourths of the way through and never got around to replaying it.
Oof. Yeah, that's tough, because that's a good game. You should probably finish that, I would say.
It's so nice that I think pretty much all games that come out now, if there's a game-breaking bug, it'll get patched. Dishonored was in that twilight period where, like, you could still have something not get fixed that was that bad.
Yeah.
I feel like the other problem with Dishonored is if you were going for, like, a pacifism route, you can't just be like, oh, well, guess I'll just kind of blunder, you know, speed run my way through the first, you know, three quarters of it back to where I was.
Hmm. Well, fortunately, the high chaos route is also fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just, you know, throwing some suggestions out there. It's a good game.
There are some suggestions like grenades.
Yeah. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I played Gears of War and really liked it. I was a good way into Gears of War 2 and was having a whale of a time, but put it down, drifted away from gaming for a bit, and by the time I came back, I had such a collection that I was trying to catch up on new stuff. Cool. I can see it there, and it's metal tin on the shelf calling to me. Maybe I'll dig it out and finish it.
Gears heavy episode this week for a franchise that I haven't thought about in decades. Yeah.
Good series of games.
Nice. Dennis, what does Peter say?
Peter says, Chrono Trigger. Not sure why, but I just can't get myself to finish the story in the floating continent portion of the game. I do want to go back and finish it because I love the game, but I just can't find a way to, quote unquote, force myself to get back into it.
There definitely is a certain amount of wind that gets pulled from the sails after you beat Magus. Yeah. Kind of a, you know, the midway climax point. Yeah, I could see that. Also worth finishing. People are saying good games that they haven't finished, and it makes me sad.
Well, it's such a tightrope to walk for JRPGs that want to do the kind of, you beat the big bad, but there's a new big bad twist.
Right,
because,
right.
You know, done right, it kind of blows your mind. You're like, oh my God, this world is so much bigger than I even realized. Like, I truly, I've only scratched the surface. But, you know, on the bad side or done not so well, it creates a huge dropping off point.
Yeah. Yep. let's see here. Spoon says, Knights of the Old Republic 2. I had a game-breaking glitch on what I believe was the last planet before the end game.
Oh, no.
And due to bad save management on the Xbox 360, the save file was at a point where I was locked on the planet 45 hours into the game. Someday I'll probably fire up the Steam version I probably got for pennies at some point. Since it's been so long, I might not feel the sting of starting such a long game over from scratch. You could also mitigate that sting by using some of the restored content patches as well. So, you know, you can, if anything starts feeling like it's a bummer, you could say, well, there's probably cut content that I didn't see on the way here. So give yourself that motivation. The plausible deniability, that maybe you're at the execution and yours is the gun that is loaded with a blank. But that blank is some content that they cut. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just pretend. Yeah. Man, I did not intend for this to be an advice session, giving people strategies for
it's games that are like worth going back to. That was the whole idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and your image here is Baldur's Gate, Dennis. So I'm going to be curious about that. Yeah.
I know. I'm sure there's a lot of people that were scrambling to finish 2 ahead of 3.
Yeah. And finally here, David, what does Maniav say?
Maniav says, Fallout New Vegas. I don't have a PC, so my experience of this was on PS3.
Oof.
Despite having about a dozen characters overall and having hit max level on most of them, only 2 were attempts to finish. Both times, the final quest I was on broke and I couldn't continue.
No, no.
I think I'll finish it one day, but who knows?
In this case, if it was the final quest, YouTube that shit.
Yeah.
YouTube and Wiki, I think, right here. Because that final quest is no great shakes anyway.
You're at a dozen characters, 2 attempts, and 0 successes. I want to know how many total characters you get up to before you finish the game.
I don't know. It kind of seems like you could parlay that time into playing Fallout 4. You know, there are lots of good games you could play in addition. Mm. I'm just saying in this particular circumstance, if I'm passing judgment, which obviously I am, on how people should proceed, I don't think that Maniav has, a lot to be ashamed of here if they just take the L and go to YouTube on it.
Take the YT.
Yeah. Yeah. So my answer on this is going to be Nier Automata.
Mm-hmm.
Played, got the first ending, put it down for all of the usual reasons because I've got the content sickness, and never came back to it. And part of that whole game is like you get the ending, but then it moves into kind of a retelling of the game from kind of a different perspective or with something changed. Mm-hmm. My fear is if I go back now, without having replayed the first one, I will not remember what actually is different about it. I would need to like start from the beginning in earnest and then just keep going.
So would you say that you are nearly done?
No. There are at least 3 other like full plays of the game that I would need to do to be done. But I recognize the pun. I just will not acknowledge it.
Okay.
Yeah. See, what you need to do is make sure you get the ending where you die from eating a fish on your way to the first ending, and then you can rest comfortably saying you've seen multiple endings.
That's my story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For anyone not familiar, there's just an item that you get offered. It's like, hey, try this fish, and then the screen pops up and is like, it was poison. The end.
Mm-hmm.
So
those robots are not meant to eat that fish.
Nope.
Yeah. David, how about you?
So for me, it's definitely Bloodborne.
Okay.
I think consider it to be my favorite game of all time, but I haven't actually finished. I got stuck on, Child of Kos or whatever?
Orphan of Kos, yes.
Orphan of Kos. Got stuck on that and was trying to be, kind of side area before I went back and finished up the main story.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Where did you get in the main story before you decided to head over and do old hunter stuff?
Is it the wet nurse, I think?
Yeah, okay, yeah. So you're right there at the end. Yeah, if you beat Murgo's wet nurse in the Nightmare of Mensis, then yeah.
Yeah.
So again, knocking on the door. That's one that I don't think watching a video of the end would suffice.
Right. And I should say also then in the Chalice Dungeons, I got to, I think it's the Curse Dungeon.
The defiled version of the Watchdog fight probably stopped you.
Yeah, or I think there's that, and then there's one where you take extra elemental damage and then you have to fight like a fire oriented hunter, something like that. But I'll probably go back. Honestly, at some point I'll probably just like power level my character to be just completely OP. The biggest thing I was actually thinking the other day that I wish Bloodborne had is something like Remnant has, where you can just reset the game's like state while keeping all of your levels and items and stuff.
Oh yeah.
So that, you know, I could go back and, you know, play through the story and kind of get back up to it on that without having to, you know, re-level and such.
Yeah. That would probably be best. So like just start a new game plus early, but have things scaled relative to where you were.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. I just did Bloodborne again is one of those ones that's good enough, and I'm sure it's been long enough. You just restart that. That'd be fun.
Honestly, my biggest problem is the game is extremely difficult for me before I get some of the heavy weapons.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you need
Ludwig's Blade. Sword and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, at some point.
It's out there. It's waiting for you.
Did they ever port that to PC?
Nope.
Okay.
It's rumored every week, but yeah never been officially ported.
The port to PC is probably what would be at least for sure that I'd be willing to give it another go.
Mm-hmm.
So I know was that on. Maybe I can pirate it or whatever, you know, emulate it.
Do you still have your... I don't think PS4 emulation is where it's at. Do you still have your PS4?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, Bloodborne is a good answer. Ben, your answer better be good, too.
It's blood-related as well. I tried to play the Witcher DLC games, but it had been too long between playing the Witcher 3 and playing the DLCs that I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I think I'm done here.
And they're tough, too. Like, Hearts of Stone is amazing, but it has one of the, like, rudest, like, intros that you have. Yeah.
That's a shame, because Witcher 3 has a great intro. Just slowly eases you into how to play it.
Yep. No, yeah. And Hearts of Stone just hits you over the head and says, fuck you. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, mine is No Man's Sky.
Okay.
This was a game I bought, unfortunately, at launch and, you know, put some time into, and then was like, well, I don't know what I'm doing here. So I stopped playing until it started to get better, and I started another run. And then wandered away from it, and then came back, wandered away, heard there was a VR port, started that, wandered away from that, started again in VR. So there have been so many times, and like this entire time, I kept myself unspoiled on like what's at the center of the galaxy, which is the thing that you're kind of moving towards throughout. And even that now, finally, it's just been so long that I've kind of picked up vibes of what that might be. And I don't know if I'll actually go back and finish it. I liked the idea of finally seeing for myself the ending. But there's a lot of good games out there.
So a great way to get back in is the expeditions.
Yeah. Do those cover the main story components?
Definitely no.
Okay.
That's kind of the point, actually.
Okay.
And that's, again, that updates so frequently that, like, you can catch yourself saying, oh, I'll just wait for the next big one, and I'll jump in then. And, you know, it'll just keep happening two times a year forever.
Yeah, I don't quite understand how the, like, business proposition on that works, but, you know, I'm glad that it seems to.
If it was going to fail, it would have by now. So it has to work. I don't know. I kind of stopped worrying about it. It's not for me to lose sleep over. Either that or devil deal. Deal with the devil. Mm-hmm. D-deal.
The deal.
Yeah. Good question, Dennis. Thank you for posting it, and good responses, folks. Thank you for responding. I hope you appreciated the unsolicited advice. Didn't mean to do that to you, but I did. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to the Duckfeed Community Facebook group and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Hi there, Dottie. let's see. Ben, though you were not able to talk about Baldur's Gate 3 because of PC limitations, I will throw it to you for a story about Baldur's Gate 3.
That won't stop me from talking about it here. That's right. The new story I brought was that Larian, the studio behind Baldur's Gate 3, released numbers on players in the first opening week or two of the game. And basically what classes were the hot picks and what races were the hot picks. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was just interesting to see some bar graphs. Surprisingly to me, at least, the most popular class choice was Paladin in Baldur's Gate 3. Yeah.
People like being a stick in the mud.
50,000.
By a wide margin. And then followed by Sorcerer, then Warlock, then Rogue, and then kind of tapers off the rest of classes there. Notably,
what is the least popular?
Cleric. Yeah. Took a huge dump. Which
is the default, by the way.
Cleric's kind of like not far from a paladin. It's just the difference is like the weapon that they're holding, but
ideologies. That's amazing to me the default is the least popular.
Well, no, I think there's some reverse psychology there. Is no one wants to feel basic, and so they can't go with the default choice,
and so they all end up going with the most popular one by a wide margin. Yeah,
yep. It's the hipster epidemic.
Although, what race is the most popular?
Yeah, so same deal with the races. The first three are kind of close together, but it's half elf, human, and elf. So pretty humanoid choices for the top three.
Strike what I said about people not wanting to be basic.
Yeah. I actually read some of this before, so yeah, that's why I was going with that.
Yeah.
The middle three, then, after following that, is Dragonborn, Tiefling, and Drow. So at least people kind of branch out, but then a lot of like height purists over here, because like the ones at the bottom are dwarf, gnome, halfling, and I don't know what a githyanki is.
They're basically Protoss.
Yeah, like from from the astral plane. They're like planar raiders. The githyanki and githzerai. They look dumb. I don't think they look very cool.
Okay.
So.
Oh yeah, I mean, on the race side, this is just a bar graph of how fuckable are they.
No.
The race I wish they would add and do right is the Kenku, who are they're crow people.
Oh.
And they canonically can only say like words and phrases they've heard before.
Huh.
So I would love to see them actually do that, where like as you go through the game, you build up
vocabulary.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Huh. Lots of bird people races, because there's also the Aarakocra, but they don't have that. They don't have that speech limitation. Huh. Well, very little of this is surprising. I did expect Dragonborn and Tiefling to be higher up, just because when I see people post the characters that they have made, like those are very heavily featured.
Those seem more fuckable. Yeah,
I'm surprised it was a better showing from the furry community.
I mean, what's the furry option here?
Oh, can you not play like Tabaxi and stuff?
No, there's no Tabaxi. Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah. Well, some say, I didn't know Drow was an official option you could take.
You could be a druid, though, and turn into a bear.
True.
And then have, you know, steamy sex scenes.
That's not furry, that's Therian. Come on.
There are a few other fun facts I wanted to throw out, too, where it said 93% of the players made, like, a custom class instead of doing, like, just a basic option.
Makes sense.
And 10% of the players were creating for over an hour the characters.
I can't believe it's that low. I would easily cross that mark.
Can you recreate your characters? Because that is my biggest pet peeve with these sorts of games, is I care about character creation, but not necessarily in the first 10 minutes of a game.
I don't know.
I don't know, because I haven't played it.
Yeah, no idea. It's on PC, so I'm sure there's a mod you can do to reinitiate your appearance. Yeah. Let's see here. Man, I would really like to play that game, but can't for all of the aforementioned reasons from last week.
Wait, what were the aforementioned reasons? I wasn't here.
Oh, no, I just looked at time, and yeah. I don't know when we're playing it for Watch Out for Fireballs. So, fair. Yeah.
Well, I mean, since it's a retro gaming podcast, it'll have to be what, at least 10 years.
Oh no, it's not a retro gaming podcast anymore. Yeah,
but then how will people troll you for incredibly stupid reasons?
like you just did?
Troll?
Yes, like I just did.
Okay.
Do you not know me?
Since we talked about a sequel, there, David, what's happening with sequels?
Yeah, so apparently the time between sequels is actually getting longer.
Yep.
One of my favorite things of this story is they actually have really cool bar graphs where you can basically see, for each series, kind of, they have marked out, where the games came out. And most of them, as they say, are getting longer. It used to be that about 2 years was the average. Now we're getting up to like 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Call of Duty, which is just like a perfect square wave of once a year.
But that's even going to be changing too, because like that's something that's come out in some of the documents that released from the Microsoft acquisition, which is like talking about cooling down on that model for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking about that the other day. Like it's been more than a decade since we got a new Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
Yeah.
So they do mention that some of the approaches is doing the GTA thing of just putting more and more DLC out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things I haven't considered is they said in the past, one of the ways they handled this was putting out like sequels on portable platforms.
Yeah.
Portable platforms aren't really a thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Although I feel like, isn't that kind of what the Switch is?
Yeah, Switch is portable-esque. It's just not seen the same way. It's not the same kind of thing that the PS Vita or the PSP and the DS were, right?
Yeah, I mean, portable platforms are now whole-ass consoles.
Yes,
right. Or I just miniature think it PCs. Seems to me like if you look at like Monster Hunter Rise, that seems to me like it's basically a portable version of Monster Hunter World.
Yeah, but then they brought it, like, I don't even know that that's a... I don't know enough from playing Monster Hunter Rise or Monster Hunter World to know how stripped back Rise is. Yeah. Didn't seem like it was very stripped back based on what I had seen. So
they also mentioned that this unfortunately just feeds into the whole thing of like when a game does come out, they expect it to make, billions of trillions of dollars or it's considered a failure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Therefore, they only make safe sequels.
Right.
It's like the movie industry.
Yeah, It's almost like expecting 10 to 100x returns on every single thing is not line go up is not good for anybody except for people who get richer when the line goes up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is going to be the Barbie and Oppenheimer of the gaming world?
Oh, I don't know.
We already had Doom and Animal Crossing.
I mean,
we need a new iteration of that.
It was quite nearly going to be Baldur's Gate 3 and Starfield. And then they moved that. Yeah, I don't know.
But overall, this really interesting article. The thing I do find kind of funny is how myopically focused on AAA games it is.
Oh,
so
yeah,
they
yeah.
Sure, sure. have a quote where they're talking about like how, oh man, fans just expect, each game it's got to be like, twice as big and have, so much better graphics. So it's like, no, that's your marketing department that expects that.
Yeah.
And they also comment that, man, there just aren't as many games being made overall.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Hmm. It's not great. That's what it is. Yeah.
I wonder what definition of game they're using in that, because
Yeah, because I feel like if you're counting indie games,
Yeah, if you're counting the Toilet Chronicles, I mean,
yeah, I mean, just we won't have data on that until Toilet Chronicles 2 comes out. Sorry, Toilet Chronicles number 2.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. And also, like, the focus on AAA is probably underlined by the fact that this story was put up on Axios. Like,
yeah,
Stephen Totilo.
I have no idea who that is.
It's like mostly like a political site, Axios. Hmm. Stephen Totilo is a longtime games developer, is the main byline on it. This is more of like a broad business trend. And, you know, indie games are not talked about as broad business trends. That's more of a, you know, more of just like little profiles. Yeah.
You know, know them as the thing I use to make HTTP requests.
Axios?
Yep.
Let's see. Speaking of Starfield, Dennis, what's happening with that game?
Yeah, so Starfield is about to come out, and I know what you're thinking, but Dennis, how can I enjoy the game if I don't know when New Atlantis was founded? or how am I even supposed to get started if I don't understand what the United Colonies fleet did in response to the Freestar mobilization? Well, I have good news for you.
Are you mocking me? Because I definitely would worry about those things. Just saying.
Yes, I am mocking you then. Yes. But fear not. Fear not. This is good news for you. Stellaris website put up a huge, sprawling 300-year timeline so that you can ease into the game. And it starts in the year 2050, which is when they say humans first arrive on Mars, and that by 50 years later, humans are living in space, and then goes all the way through 2328, when Barrett convinces Constellation to purchase Star Station L868 and modify it to become a deep space scanner nicknamed the Eye. If you understood as many words in that sentence as I did, then you understand about two or three words. So
all I have to say is congratulations, or I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yes. but yeah, it's a, you know, if anything, is a representation of the kind of game Stellaris is going to be. A 300-year timeline just to get you started.
Yeah.
Oh, what am I saying?
You said Stellaris. You said Stargate. You said everything except for the name of this game.
At this point, I might rather see get a sequel.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, this is very indicative of the kind of game you're getting into. A 300-year history as just a little aperitif for you.
Man, this shit should never see the light of day. I'm serious. This needs to be in a binder in the studio, and any of these details that need to come out need to be fucking they need to be fucking pertinent to the thing you are doing in the game. Mm-hmm, I'm sorry, but like, I don't know, the specificity of the years, it feels like it's written for TV tropes, yeah. And I don't care for it.
So at the bottom of the timeline, it says 2330 AD, Starfield begins. And that's not actually in world. That is how long it will take you to read all this backstory.
I mean, effectively, at my rate of 0 words per minute.
Yeah. Yeah. God bless anyone who's jumping in on that game. It seems like a very dangerous drug.
Does it now?
Oh yeah, like this is a game that looks like people are going to disappear into.
I don't know.
I mean, this is why you'll never see me again. No.
Okay, I'm
no.
Shocked.
I actually know nothing about Starfield, but I do love me some timeline.
Okay,
I think it matters completely on like how well the game runs on release date. If it's like a buggy mess, people are going to bounce off of it.
And
if
yeah,
that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, it's very possible it could get cyberpunked, and with no console presence at all, really.
It's coming out on Xbox, right? Just Xbox and PC, I think.
It's complicated on the Xbox. It's only coming out on one of the models, but not the other. Yeah, so it's you know, it's weird.
If it gets cyberpunked, I look forward to the anime.
And then the expansion that fixes all the problems.
Yeah. And don't forget the multiple "we're sorry" memos and tweets.
Cannot wait for that PNG. Give me that
update
.png.
The timeline. 2023. We issue an apology. I'm so sorry.
We know our players were excited for a seamless experience and yada yada yada.
Yeah, we did not meet our own high standards that our community is thankfully holding us to.
In retrospect, we shouldn't have spent so much time writing the timeline instead of making the game.
Oh my god. And finally here, there is a I believe it's upcoming or about to come out. It is on August 17th, so it'll be out this week. There is an updated re-release of Red Dead Redemption coming out on the PS4 and the Switch, which is a big deal because that game had been kind of stuck on that previous generation for a while. Red Dead Redemption 2 came out and made a big splash. And people were like, "Hey, I want to play the first one," and then it just was hard to do.
How much do you want to play that first one?
Yes. Do you want to hook up a whole new box to your whole thing? And no, not really. So this is cool. People get to play that in addition to the undead nightmare expansion, which is big and substantial. But people are balking at the price. Because Rockstar is saying it is going to be $50 when it comes out. And when people complained, the CEO, Strauss Zelnick, said that is the commercially accurate price. Which is...
yes, we are fucking game. You that hard.
Yeah. And also, there's no PC port. People are wondering, and there is no word on that, which seems kind of strange to me.
Yeah,
but this is going to include fixes for Red Dead Redemption Online, right?
No, I think that is still considered to be a dead letter. Mm. Yeah. So try not to get too much into price to hour or whatever, but $50 out the gate does feel a little bit excessive, especially since it's also PlayStation 4 as well. I don't know. Maybe sell them separately. It is a weird look on Rockstar, especially I'm going to say especially so hot on the heels of them having done that very botched Grand Theft Auto trilogy re-release. However, that might have been 3 years ago.
I mean, Rockstar has kind of gone straight to the inshitification of their franchises. So.
Yeah. I've got no reason to believe that the technical update on Red Dead Redemption 1 is going to be bad, like the trilogy was. But it does show a little bit of a inshitification is a good way to put it. So, be excited about that if you will. And that is my story. And that sounds like a segment to be. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons!
The credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 469. We really appreciate you taking the time. Just a little programming note. This is for the people gathered here, but also for people who are listening. Going to be taking the week of Labor Day off. So no episode that week. Planning for that. So that's a couple weeks out. Make a note if you can. But otherwise, if you want to help out the show, you know what you can do. Patreon.com/DuckFeedTV. You can follow the DuckFeed community group on Facebook. Leave a rating or review or tell your friends. All of this is stuff that that helps us go along, in addition to coming back next week. Dennis, anything you want to plug?
What's coming up? You can find Deck of Wonders on Amazon now, so you can just search for that and have it in your home in no time. And I think that's the big one for now.
Cool. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
There's another plug. Me and Dennis are recording on Jowlichan's podcast this week. I don't want to say what game it is, but
you've already, I don't know. She's already mentioned what it is. Okay. Yeah, she's right, already sweet. Talked about it.
Talking about Portal then. Mm-hmm. And Portal 2.
Nice.
Could be thinking in portals.
And don't you fucking dare call that an episode of The Level, because I will send my very nice lawyer after you so fast. He will not understand a single word. He will not understand a single word of what I force him to say to you.
I've never seen a lawyer read so much off of what was written on his hand. That was odd interaction.
Just seem to be referencing his earpiece a lot.
I like that you're like feeding it to him live.
Oh man. She records pretty far ahead on that, doesn't she?
I think so. Probably half month to a month ahead of time.
Might be eating some of her whatever the opposite of a backlog is, because of the strike, but we'll see how much longer that goes.
Yeah. Hopefully, fingers crossed. We froze some shows and chained some shows recently after getting communication from the union. So, fingers crossed that the producers pull their head out of their ass and stop the strike. So,
producers famously good at pulling their heads out of their ass.
I know, right? We can hope for miracles. Miracles have happened before. But yeah, that's a jalachan.place if you want to go and subscribe to that, so you can be ready and listen to the other stuff that is there. Yeah, you know, like y'all have been on a few episodes. I was on one as well. Yeah. So cool. Well, I have been Cole Ross. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can follow me on Twitch at GreenLaser73. I went back to that because I was not really doing Deck of Wonders that often there.
I saw you pop on and stream. What were you doing?
I did. So when the community finished building this deck, I played the first several games on stream. And thank God I went 3-0. I felt very good about that.
Nice.
And it's since evened out. But good times.
Yeah.
I'm David Meisweth.
Oh, yeah, I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Yeah, didn't mean to interrupt the flow of that, of the outro. Who has titles?
Titles. Let's see here. I've got three.
Okay.
The first is Crimson Headed Stepchild. The next is The Toilet Pamphlet. And then the final one is Just Injustice.
There we go. So is it Justin, like the name, like Justin Justice, or just?
No, it is just Injustice.
Gotcha.
As in the first game, the game before Injustice 2 was named Just Injustice.
Gotcha.
Just Injustice sounds like a 90s boy band member.
Or a stripper. Justin Justice would also be a stripper.
Por que no los dos?
Yeah,
I was going to say, I mean, essentially the same thing.
Who else has one?
I got one. I got, you gotta do shit when shit's on the line.
Okay. And, David?
I've got nothing.
I like Crimson, so I don't have any either. I like Crimson Headed Stepchild.
Yeah. I support this.
All right.
I favor that.
Cool.
Assuming no stepchildren will be offended.
Hey, I myself am a redheaded stepchild, so no worries.
Straight from the horse's mouth.
Giving us the pass.
Yep. It is decided.